Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com and the author of the Prayer Prescription Series. In fact, the Prayer Prescription Series is the sponsor of this show. Please go to katelovingschenck.com to receive a free book I wrote called 22 Keys to Self-Healing. Just put your information into the box on the upper right-hand corner of the page and you will receive the book. My guest this evening is Ellen Canner, author of Feeding the Hungry Ghost, Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner. Ellen is an award-winning food editor, the HuffPost Meatless Monday blogger, and the syndicated columnist for the Edgy Veggie. She has also published in numerous cooking magazines and online publications. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Please join me in welcoming Ellen Canner to the show. Hello, Ellen.
Hello, Kate. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you. It's so great. I love your book. I read every word. And The Hungry Ghost, we had a discussion about what is The Hungry Ghost with my friends this morning at a wonderful market you would love in downtown Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I was going to say, I wish I'd been there.
I know. But tell us, what is The Hungry Ghost? And, you know, what prompted you to name your book that? And what does it mean to you?
The Hungry Ghost is a Tao concept. They are people who are hungry and clutchy and needy, and maybe you know some. But back in the day, it was determined that they were just so frantic in life that they were that way even after they died, and they would come back and haunt you. So if you wanted to make them go away, what works both in China and Japan, they have hungry ghost festivals where you honor your very hungry ghost relatives by prayer and by food offerings. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? Because the same thing works for us now. You know, we are all so hungry, 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 not just for food, but for meaning and connection and a good time that we don't seem to be having. And all this other stuff out there, we get crazy. And if we can kind of calm down and show ourselves and each other some compassion, preferably over a great meal, that really quiets our hungry ghosts.
Yes, and I'm wondering if the hunger that people are having is really due to a fear of death. I mean, the hungry ghost is a kind of an indication of death, but it's everybody just running around aimlessly eating foods that aren't healthy and that create cravings. And I know that the beautiful recipes in your book are really meant to stop the cravings that are so common in people's lives. I mean, they're just wonderful whole foods and satisfying and bring people together in a common sharing a meal. There's probably nothing more beautiful than that.
I know. It's such a simple thing, and yet we've gotten away from it because we do lead such overstuffed lives these days. But it is a real returning to something primal and healing. And it doesn't have to be an elaborate meal. In fact, I find sometimes the simplest ones are the most comforting.
Yes, absolutely. And the elaborate meals are often kind of riched and laced with a lot of too much richness.
You don't need, yeah.
Yeah, too many calories. And, of course, now, you're a vegan, and the things that you create are vegan. Now, maybe people don't know what vegan is. Tell our audience what that is.
Vegan is eating a diet and living a life that is entirely plant-based. That means no animal products, not even eggs from a chicken or anything like that. And the wonderful thing is there are fabulous plant-based substitutes, and there is no nutrient you can get in an animal that you can't get better in a plant, plus you will not be, you know, your dinner will not be coming at the cost of a life.
Yes, yes.
So there's the compassion angle, because that's really what got me into it. I love cows, and I thought, wow, you know, I was a kid, and I thought, wow, if I love cows, I really oughtn't be eating them. And that was a pretty easy choice for me. I realize it gets very, very complicated, because human animals are very complicated. But the recipes in my book, sometimes when you say vegan, people get that flash of panic, like, oh, gosh, you know, you're giving me something I don't want. But these recipes they have cultural ties. They go back generations and generations and generations. If I said, how about an Indian curry that's got chili and garlic and onion, and it's just going to really make your mouth pop? Well, okay, that happens to be vegan. If I tell you these wonderfully slippery Asian noodles with shiitakes, how about that? Okay, that sounds pretty good. Well, that's vegan too. Vegan foods have been part of our cultures for years. They just are.
Yes, that's right. So you can study the cultural recipes of our ancestors and get a pretty good idea of what a vegan diet is.
Yeah, it's not newfangled. It's very old.
I think people get an image of people, a vegan going into the woods and just eating roots and vegetables or something.
I know. And some of us do forage. Some of us are modern foragers and have to go to the market to do it. But any little steps you can take towards reconnecting with your food comes from, how it's grown, I think those are really profound changes. No one really likes to be told what to do, me especially. So rather than say, okay, no, you need to do this, you need to do that, I have what I call in the book a series of gentle nudges that, as I say, sort of bring you back to, okay, well, what does it mean to grow your own food? Well, why don't you try it? Why don't you try just growing a little pot of herbs on your windowsill? There are things we've always known but somehow kind of forgot about.
Right. I'm curious, how have the herbs that you have grown and the vegan diet, how long have you been a vegan?
I've been a vegan for over 10 years. I've been vegetarian since I was 13.
How have the herbs that you put into your foods and the vegan diet that you've been on for 10 years, how has that made you a healthier person? What have you noticed about your health, your quality of health because of this diet?
I do know that a lot of the colds I used to get as a kid, I do not get anymore, which is real nice. And, you know, I'm not alone in just sort of driving myself nuts at work. And I used to really just get walloped with fatigue. I don't get that anymore. I mean, or if I do, I can bounce back in an afternoon rather than just be drag my carcass around for days. I got more bounce.
More balance?
More balance, yes. Also more bounce.
Yes, yes. Well, we just became vegan, I would say, in the last 2 months.
Oh, my goodness. Congratulations.
Thank you. And
it is a journey. I realize it's not an easy one for people.
Well, it's not. We haven't. I have to say that I'm probably going faster than my husband, but it's hard.
Yeah, we do that.
It's harder to get wheat out of the diet, for instance. Now, I noticed that your recipes do call for wheat, and the reason I shy away from wheat is because of the GMOs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I was going to ask if I can just substitute spelt, and maybe you have other recommendations for the wheat that is in your recipes.
There are wonderful ancient grains you can substitute. There are wonderful ancient grain flours, like spelt is fantastic for baking. Sometimes
yes.
you have to mess a little bit with proportion, use a little bit more because it's a denser flour, or rather
right.
a little bit less. But yeah, there's quite a few recipes that I do that call for spelt flour. Because I know so many people are being sensitive to wheat these days. I don't know if it's GMOs, although I certainly do not recommend them. I don't know if the quality of the soil we plant in has gotten so degraded. But, yeah, it's when people say, you know, I was never wheat sensitive before, but I am now, and I know they feel crazy. They're not. There's something out there. We don't know really what it is. You kind of have to eat defensively
mm-hmm.
these days.
Yes, you do. And then, well, if you're eating organic grains and if you're eating organic foods in general, well, let's say organic wheat, the chances of it being GMO is slim to none. Is that
right.
true?
That's
yes.
exactly right, because you have to really want to be an organic farmer. It is hard work. You have to document everything. You have to
mm-hmm.
know where your seeds came from. You have to know what's in your soil. It is a real labor of love, and to support an organic diet is wonderful. It's not only good for you and good for the farmer, it is good for the planet, because it means you are eating food that is grown in a sustainable way, that is not damaging the planet, that's in fact making it feel better. We could all use more of that.
Yes, and we have been growing our own vegetables for many years here on this. It's called a mini farm,
mm-hmm.
they call it. And the thing is, it hasn't had any herbicides or pesticides on it, I don't think, ever. So that has made it easy to grow foods that you can stand by with great love and conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, the great thing that grows on this land is stinging nettle. And when stinging nettle grows, it can't grow on earth that has had herbicides and pesticides, ever used. And it just is prolific, and you can use it for teas. It's a great immune enhancer, great, very high in antioxidants. And you can make a great spinach, or not spinach, but a great Indian sog with stinging nettle.
Oh,
it's just
wow.
tremendous. Very rich in iron, and it's just tremendous.
And I like a self-selecting plant that says, no, I'm not going to mess in your nasty field. I'm only going to grow in a welcoming environment.
Yes, that's right. And it seems like at the heart of everything that you talk about is hospitality. The great meaning of hospitality is, that concept is something that often is lost in our modern corporate environments and so forth.
Yeah, I say hospitality used to be a moral imperative, and now it's something we teach in schools because we don't know how to do it naturally. It's modern life, I suppose, but I am calling for a return to simple welcome, to meeting people, to taking a little bit of a risk, to opening yourself up, to opening your home up, to opening your kitchen up to people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's something magical about it.
There really is. So the old 1960s and 70s potluck is a great thing that people can benefit from.
Right, and it really takes the, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to make dinner by myself and eat it alone, which a lot of people do. No wonder people aren't enjoying what they eat. I think eating should be a communal act. The cooking should be a communal act. Go to the farmer's market with your friends like you did this morning. It sounds wonderful. It connects you with the farmer, with the food, with things you didn't even know about. There are ways
conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meaningful conversations. Well, I remember living in a little town in Northern California called Happy Camp.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
We had revolving potluck dinners every week at different homes, and it was a spontaneous thing. It wasn't really affiliated with any organization. It was just a lot of friends and it was really good food. And I think we've lost that. I mean, that is something. My husband and I love to open our kitchen up, and we always have, but I have noticed that there isn't a lot of reciprocation.
Yeah, same here. Wish we lived closer together.
Yeah, that would really be fun. Yes.
I realize it is very difficult for people these days, and I also know, like, a lot of my friends don't live in Miami with me. So I kind of have to go out of my way to make new friends, and one of the best ways to do that is say, hey, we're having a bunch of people over for dinner tonight. Why don't you come?
Yes, and another good thing is to say, and then we're going to play music. And everybody brings their instruments. There's nothing better than that.
Oh, wow. What do you play?
I play the fiddle. And
oh, that's right. There's that picture of you on your website, of course.
And, of course, if I had a little more time, I would play it more often. But I just love it. I've been playing to the kids. Then my husband has a beautiful voice and plays the guitar. And then we just bring in other people into the mix and jam, you know, for hours after a good meal. And it's fun. It's really quite energizing.
It is. We can kind of make our own good time. It doesn't – somebody was talking about a magic phone, and I'm thinking, oh, you can't really rely on a phone for magic. You kind of got to make your own these days.
I know. In fact, it's the magic phone and the computers and all the technology that has really uncentered. As much as I love technology, don't get me wrong, I love it.
Oh, me too. I would be very unhappy without my laptop. But
you couldn't have written your book, I'm sure, although people do still write books on typewriters.
Yes, and
but,
even by hand. But my handwriting
hand.
Is so bad, I would not do that to anyone.
But I think you have to seek a healthy balance.
Mm-hmm.
With you know, getting offline, even a certain portion of every day is very soothing to the psyche.
It really helps.
You know how you get distracted by too much technology? You can't keep your mind on any one thought. That needs to be remedied, I think, with a certain time away from this. Even getting on the phone, not answering calls, you know, getting off the computer, getting out in nature is the most important thing, too.
It really is. It's so soothing. I mean, we just have a teeny tiny backyard and an even tinier growing space back there. But it is so restorative. And we're coming into spring here, and it's been crazy with birds and squirrels and bees and lizards. You do not need acreage. You can create a really wonderful biosphere with very little. Nature is incredibly benevolent.
Oh, yes. Do you have a biodynamic kind of setup in your backyard?
Yes.
Layered gardens and such?
Yes. Some that could use a bit of propping up, but it's all kind of developed organically. The plants have self-selected in some places more than others. It's really kind of great.
Yeah, I mean, self-selecting is a very great sign, isn't it, when you see a plant that is there one year but may not be there the next. So that plant is telling you that this is what you need.
Mm-hmm. There are so many great signs nature puts out that we're not really attuned to. One of the neat ways you can kind of get back in the rhythm of it is seasonal eating. I mean, just look at what's growing what's been harvested instead of eating what's not. It,
mm-hmm.
Again, it's simple, but it's kind of profound, too. That's when food has its most nutrients, it has its deepest flavor. Why would you mm-hmm. want to cheat yourself out of that?
Yes, and your book is based on the seasons, and I love the way you have organized your book and the seasonal changes that are deeply within ourselves and our psyche, and the foods that we can eat surrounding those times is very profound, very profound.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I didn't think of it first, you know. Now that we're starting to get into spring for real, it's sort of a time of awakening and delicate new growing. And you know, you get the first delicate leaves of spring and asparagus and tender berries. They remind us, yeah, there are new beginnings here. It's very exciting.
Yes. I'll never forget the time years and years ago. I was foraging out in the forest.
See, and you do it too. I knew you did.
Yes, yes. years ago, and I came upon the most spectacular asparagus patch that had been abandoned.
Wow.
It was spectacular, and it was so abundant. So, of course, I got the idea from Yul Gibbons, who must have been the original vegan of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But he really was an inspiration, wasn't he? Oh, my.
Wow.
But your stone soup, I haven't had a chance to try your recipes, which I intend to do, but the stone soup, explain, which seems to be the staple of many of your recipes. So tell us about that.
It's a myth and it's a real thing, or it's a fairy tale and it's a real thing. The real thing is, because I use so many vegetables in my cooking and in my recipes, there's always going to be bits you don't use, you know, little carrot ends and sturdy stalks that you might not want in a more delicate stew.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than throw them out, what I do is I put them in a big bag and I freeze them. And then when the bag is full or I've got, you know, a few minutes to kill, I'll put on a pot of a soup pot of hot water. I'll throw everything in there. I'll bring it to a boil. And I'll make broth with it. And it becomes
mm-hmm.
the basis of any new soup I'm making, or I'll cook whole grains in it. It adds nourishment. It adds flavor. It isn't out of a box or a can. It's got no additional salt. And then I throw the boiled vegetable bits into my compost and give it a stir. It is
mm-hmm.
using every bit. I have a real horror of waste. We waste a
yes.
lot of food in this country.
Oh, I know. How long do you boil the vegetables that you've frozen?
You don't even have to. If you just put it on
simmer.
To a boil.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Just bring it to a boil, clap the lid on, and turn it off. That is, and just sort of let it take care of itself for a bit.
Oh, my gosh. That is so cool. I am getting so hungry just talking about this. But it is so true that rather than just throw all those vegetables into the compost to begin with, we can just create very delicious like a foundation for all of these wonderful foods.
Right. Fruits and vegetables are the gift that can keep on giving, you know, so why not take it?
Now, in Miami and Florida, you were mentioning the abundance of mangoes and avocados. Do you have
yeah.
trees nearby that you can, get those fruits from?
When mangoes and avocados come into season, you would really have to be a bit of a hermit to avoid it. We've got a mango tree in our neighbor's backyard, which fortunately has very broad branches, And I always kind of like, I can see it out of my office window. So like, is that going to, that looks like it might come into our yard. I want that one. and we always have friends who are glad to share. Oh, man, they are so delicious, so good for us. We are quite, quite lucky. But again, they only come in season as we get into summer. And I would rather have a ripe mango from here than one that came from somewhere else that lost something in translation.
Right. I don't think we can grow these things. We can't grow avocados and mangoes in this climate. But it used to be that we couldn't grow figs, and now we have at least 5 or 6 fig trees in our backyard that are prolific.
Okay, so you got me beat. Or we'll say it's a tie because, man, a French fig is a very, very sexy thing.
Oh, my gosh, yes, it is. In fact, we even have some in the freezer. We just got a Vitamix.
Yes.
Do you have one?
Yes, and I have a friend who's a chef who, you know, at first I was like, do I really need a Vitamix? And she showed me, yes, I do.
Yes, you do.
I'm not necessarily gadget happy, but boy, have I seen the benefits. Are you enjoying yours?
Well, that is what got me into becoming a quick and fast vegan. Because to me, it's true that food is more than, it's more than food, it's a medicine. Each food is a medicine. And as you described some of the health benefits in your book, regarding some of those wonderful Indian herbs and stuff, you can put those herbs into the Vitamix with all manner of different, you know, you can throw avocados and kale, as well as oranges, bananas, and pineapples. And you can eat the center of the pineapple and put that into the Vitamix, because there's so many health properties in the center of the pineapple that, in general, people just throw that away, the core
right,
of the pineapple.
Right, because it's too woody for people to eat. That's fantastic. I hadn't thought of doing that. Oh, you're so clever.
Oh, it's so good for you. And, well, we got that from our wonderful demonstrator of the Vitamix in our local Costco. He was really enthusiastic. And, you just put the whole apple in. You don't bother to core it. You don't core anything. You just throw everything in. And we use as a base, I have used almond milk, but I really just throw water or ice in.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my gosh, it is a subtle but dramatic difference in the way I feel and the way I just feel so much more in tune with the earth and don't eat as much at all. And then when I do eat, it is very simple and just profoundly satisfying.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I would think that. And so he was using the Vitamix for soups as well. I noticed I was watching some of your videos on YouTube, and you use the, what do you call it?
I use the food processor because I haven't gotten the Vitamix yet.
Oh, so you would use, or you do use the Vitamix for soups now?
Sometimes I like it a little chunkier, so it depends on what I'm doing.
Yes. I think
life
chunkier is
chunky. Yeah.
Well, you know, you can make things in the Vitamix pretty chunky. You just don't put it on for too long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really a cornerstone of health, I think, that those Vitamixes. Well, for years, everybody thought that juicing, and I think juicing is very good for you, but if you're throwing away all that pulp, it's bad.
I know, and I like all that kind of chewy stuff too. I figure we have teeth.
Yeah. Oh yes, it's. I highly recommend those, and I think that as we know and as we come to become more intuitive with our lives, that walking by somebody who's selling a Vitamix, you just have to buy one. It's like. And it was the best purchase I ever made, I'll tell you.
Wow.
So tell us about the citrus fruit in Florida. Is that still as prolific? Can you get that as readily as you could years ago?
A few years ago, we had we kind of had a double whammy. We had a citrus blight. We had a natural canker, and they took down the government moved and took down a lot of citrus trees. Maybe before they needed to, but they were trying to isolate it. And then we had a frost. But citrus is just starting to make itself felt and felt well again here. We have had a beautiful grapefruit season, and I've really been enjoying that. You know, really juicy, sweet, everything a grapefruit should be, not pithy, thin skin, just got it all going on. Really beautiful.
Have you ever eaten the blood orange?
We don't get them so much here, but boy, are those cool.
Oh, my gosh. I never had one before this season, but we just throw the whole blood orange into the Vitamix and, you know, the skin and everything. Of course, it has to be organic. Everything that goes in there has to be organic. And you can and the properties, the healing properties of a lemon.
Oh, yes.
And I noticed you use lemon quite a bit in your recipes.
Again, it's very, very cleansing. It's great for digestion. It's got antioxidant properties. It makes you glow, and it really just sort of zips your food up in a great way. I think of lemon and, lemon is absolutely my favorite, but balsamic vinegar, anything you can do to add a splash or a pop to your food, that makes it so much more interesting.
It does.
So much more delicious. And when it's lemon, actually both of them, they're just very good for you, too. It's your kitchen telling you, yes, more of this, please.
Yes, it is. And I'm sure that everything that you prepare is never the same twice.
Oh, gosh, did I write that? Because it's absolutely true. I mean, my husband and I have been married a long time, and he jokes that we've never eaten the same meal twice. Because I am guided by what's in season. And, you know, what I'm in the mood for at the time or what I've got in the fridge. And I like it being like that. I like the constant, I wouldn't say challenge because it's not challenging for me. I like being open to the moment. I find it it's more of a delight for me than, okay, it's Tuesday, I might as well make what I made last Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, you sound very talented in the kitchen, and I think, do you feel that everybody can really learn to cook well with this kind of food?
I absolutely do. And I do. Someone introduced me this weekend as a chef. I said, I'm not a chef. I'm a cook. To me, there's a difference. I think we can all learn a few cooking basics. And that's really all it takes for you to be able to nourish yourself in very deep and meaningful ways. A lot of people don't cook these days. A lot of my friends don't. And so what they rely on is processed food and takeaway and stuff. You were talking about organic. Once you get food that's prepared, you have a lot less control or knowledge about what's in it. To be able to cook is to empower yourself in a really simple, basic way that we all used to know.
Yes.
And while I think the most fun way to learn some of this is to get in the kitchen with someone you know who happens to who does like to cook, we were talking technology. There's no excuse anymore. There are just a bazillion cooking videos out there if you want. You can learn, you know, you could learn it all.
Right, right. And it's, as you pointed out on the video I was watching on YouTube, you prepared something in the matter of a few minutes. And
right.
You can prepare it a day ahead or an hour ahead or even when the guests come to dinner. You just say, well, here's a glass of wine and relax, and you can make it in 2 minutes and bring it out as a snack.
Right. I really try and time it that way because I know everyone's time is precious. You don't want to have to spend a lot of time in the kitchen. The recipes I have that do take time are kind of like the stone soup. You put the lid on, you turn it down to simmer, and you have a glass of wine with your friends. It takes care of itself.
Well, how do you have time to entertain people? Do you still do that as much as you used to?
We used to do it a lot, and I have been really enjoying the book tour. But even my husband and I were saying last night, we're not even going to be here this weekend. You know, I miss having people over. So I'm going to come back to that soon. I find I miss it.
I'm sure.
And it seems to be the only way I can gather a lot of people together at once, because we are all so scattered and busy. But when you say, okay, there's going to be food, it does seem to make people say, well, all right, then I don't need to text you. I can come and see you.
Well, people are thinking, oh, my gosh, I've been invited to Ellen's house. What a great, oh, wow, that's going to be so cool. But I think that there's a certain amount of false belief about, oh, I'm not a cook. I can't cook. And
especially with all these very fancy cooking shows out there. I mean, they intimidate me. But who eats that way? Who eats that food?
Right. Are you talking about really rich kind of French cuisine-y kind of stuff?
Yeah, or molecular gastronomy, which, you know, I never did so well in science anyway. Not really for me. It's fascinating, but it does not feed me.
Now, what is it? I don't know what it is.
Oh, it is a very elaborate process where you could make the essence of celery into, like, say, foam or jelly or even a vapor. There are some chefs who like diners to show, you know, to have their stamp on food, and then there are other chefs who want the ingredients to be able to speak for themselves.
Yeah.
They both have their place. I know that I tend to frequent the places where the chefs honor the food and let it do the talking.
Yeah. I think that is true, that with all of this fancy science talk and things that are happening in the test tube as opposed to in the kitchen tend to just put people off.
Well,
and they think they can't do it.
Right, and a lot of them can't because, to a certain extent, the mad scientist in the kitchen is fun, but it's not really dinner in any sense. It's entertainment. And I think you can entertain yourself and nourish yourself at the same time. They don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Well, bringing people back to the simple way of viewing food and preparation and hospitality is really, you know, life-changing and planetary-changing and really helps people to just be more inspired about what the possibilities are, I think.
I think so, too. I mean, we are talking about very simple concepts, but talk about multitasking. You're gathering people together. You're cutting down your carbon footprint by eating a greener diet. You're saving money. You're benefiting your health. You're eating well. You're having fun. I don't get the objection.
Right. Yeah, well, I don't think if you really thought about it or if people really thought about it, there can't be any objection. It's just such a joyful way to live.
I am all about joy. I think it is a good thing.
So do you grow heirloom tomatoes?
I do. I've got some going, and the one that is going the best right now, I didn't even plant. I think it came courtesy of a bird. I had planted something,
cool,
and it didn't come up, but this other thing did. I've grown enough tomatoes. I thought, that smells like a tomato. It looks like, oh, my goodness. And, you know, in a couple of weeks, it's really gotten big, and we've staked it, and it's putting out flowers, which means very soon it'll be putting out fruit.
Oh, I love them. We they're temperamental, the heirloom tomatoes, in the sense that you have to be right on it and harvest it right at the right moment, or else they split or do some weird things that, and then the birds really love them, and they'll come down and eat it really fast. But really, there's nothing that tastes better than that. And I know that there's a lot of healing properties of a tomato.
Oh, right. Very high in antioxidants, particularly lycopene. All your bright red fruits and vegetables have... I've been doing this cooking demo called Paint Your Plate, and it's really just trying to get more produce in people, putting greens in, putting tomatoes into the foods you eat every day. Why would you want a plain bowl of rice when you can really jazz it up, nourish it up,
right,
with the fruits and vegetables we have?
Exactly. That's a good question. I'm going to say something here.
Oh, I do it too. I get this great idea and I get distracted.
I was going to tell you that Lancaster County is the best non-irrigated farmland in the world. Have you ever been here? Have you ever come to
this
place?
Yes, but I didn't know that. It's been years since I've been up.
Well, now there's more and more people taking advantage of it. Young people in the Occupy movement, as an example, are just doing great things with food here, which is really cool.
That's very exciting. We have more young farmers down here, too, and I find that very, very hopeful.
It is very hopeful. Now, do you work with children and teach them to cook?
Yes, I do. I had at first become involved with an organization, a nonprofit called Common Threads, which teaches kids to cook. The Miami chef Michelle Bernstein started it here. It originally started out of Chicago. Art Smith, Oprah's chef, has started this great nonprofit. And at first I thought, well, you know, this will be good. This will be a good community thing to do. I had the best time with these kids. I couldn't wait to do it every week. This was not, here, let me show you, okay, they were in there with hot stoves, sharp knives, and every week we made a different meal with a lot of foods they were not familiar with. But because we walked them through the process and they were there making it, they ate foods they had never eaten before, including vegetables, and they loved it. They had a sense of ownership. I did this. It's very exciting.
My heavens. Well, children are at heart wanting to make sure that the planet is preserved. And what better way for them to get in touch with that is through, not only learning how to cook or cooking with natural foods, but growing the foods and working with the earth and smelling all those wonderful smells that only the earth can provide.
Right. Organic gardens in schools, I think, should be like a curriculum must. There's really no other substitute for it. It's great. We did one last season that was a salsa garden. It was tomatoes and cilantro and chilies. And it was just really, really fun. And it was, it was exciting for them to see. And it was great, when we made a very small batch of salsa from what we had grown.
Yes.
It's wonderful for these kids. And it does taste
salsa,
so good.
Think about making salsa in a Vitamix next time.
Oh.
Because it's just tremendous. It just whips it right up. You don't have to make it, just make it a few pulses and then eat it that way.
Oh, absolutely.
And you could probably put some flaxseed in or something to kind of give it a little bit more a body.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So children, and also I've understood that people with post-traumatic stress who come back from war are really, really helped by growing food and working in the gardens and just being next to the earth. And in reality, this is probably the answer to having people restore the earth by getting them back into nature, because we are in a society now where people are completely detached from nature.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And that could be the reason why we have all of these climate catastrophes, because there are people who are working in these oil and gas and fracking and Excel pipeline industries are not at all in touch with the earth, and they just aren't. And as a result, we are, you know, doing damage, and that can be reversed by just getting people out in nature.
It's true. I think people get so overwhelmed. Gas prices or whatever the climate disaster of the moment is, and they think, well, how can I help? You know, I'm just one person. I don't know anything about this. And this is what makes people like want to just hang out and download porn and eat bad food, because they just sort of need, I just need to take care of myself, and that's the only way they know how to do it. But you are talking about really positive ways, little things we can do. Working in a community garden, you know, just an hour a week or when you can, or teaching a kid to cook or going shopping with a friend. These things make a huge difference. They really do bring us back to ourselves.
Well, getting involved as you are with the children, I think, is the single remedy for preserving the earth, because they are the ones that we are giving them the earth that they are inheriting, or that say the earth is theirs to inherit. And by doing what you're doing and having them get in touch with the colors of the food and the beautiful gardening of the plants and the food, I think is the answer to just getting the kids. You just don't know what's going to happen, you know, in the future with them. They're just going to change the world just because of that.
I think it's possible. I really do. I do not have kids, and so someone said, so why are you so passionate about this? I said, well, you know what? I'm going to get old. I want to know who's going to be taking over after me, and I want them to have the same compassion that I do. And
yes,
you got to make those connections before you can care.
Right, right. And the thing about eating meat is sad, because it's such a waste of energy. It can release the earth for.
We need every inch of growable land these days.
Yeah, we do. We do. And so the grains that we raise to feed the cattle is probably the reason GMOs were, Monsanto and those companies were originated to begin with, is because they were having to grow more and more grains and more food for the animal consumption to feed more and more people. We do have a population explosion. There's no doubt about that.
There's 7 billion of us right now. Wow.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So the food that we eat can make us feel so much better and so much more kindly towards one another.
It's true, and I'm actually a little excited, because for the first time in almost 60 years, our meat consumption has gone down a little. I mean, it's certainly nothing the cattle industry wants to talk about, but it has been just sort of going up, 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 up for years and years. Maybe we're becoming a little more aware. Maybe, and you know what, if it's just that it costs too much and people are saying, you know what, not worth it, that works too. We're making better choices.
Well, that the meat is more expensive, you mean?
Yes.
Well, it certainly doesn't cost very much to grow a garden in your window or in your backyard. And I had a wonderful experience recently where a place where I formerly worked, a woman you would think that we were completely polar opposites, but because her husband is in Afghanistan and I'm sort of a peacenik and she is a Republican and I basically don't know what I am. But the fact is that we became friends, and recently she wrote to me and said that because of the influence of our friendship, she now is getting involved in buying an organic cooperative, and her children are totally involved in this. And that is how the two of us did bond anyway, was through food. And I think that that is the common denominator. When people think they have nothing in common with people, but we do have something in common with everybody, and that is the food that we can not only eat but share. That is really the essence of what we can do to bring commonality to the so-called table.
I think that's, I am so, yes. That's very much what I talk about in the book, because we can get so divisive. Okay, this side versus that side. I write, and I'm only half joking when I say I think we could end war by taking away weapons and getting military leaders to get in the kitchen and cook together.
Because
if they don't cook together, they don't get to eat, and we all need a place at the table.
Not only that, to get into the culture of the people, the cultural foods of the people
that
we are warring with. I mean, can you imagine the military people eating the food, the indigenous food of Afghanistan?
Which is really delicious, but literally taking it in. And that is an act of hospitality. When someone shares the food of their culture with you, it really is a great leveler. It brings us all down to the to humans. It doesn't matter whose side you're on. We are all human, and we all have to come at this together, because I think we are stronger together than apart.
Yeah, and there are common things that can bring us together that need to be nurtured. And I have noticed, for instance, that there are certain topics that are no longer Republican or Democrat. Just, for instance, health care, the saving the planet, and food. These are things that we can all agree on, and you don't have to be a conservative or a liberal or progressive to buy into any of these things.
Right. No, you only have to be a human who wants the good of the planet and the good for yourself too. I think that's wonderful what you were telling me about your friends' cooperative. I mean, it really does show how we can bridge differences.
I know, and I think that really shocked me. We could have been mortal enemies, the two of us, because.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't prefer to live life like that. And I just thought that was a real success in relationship building.
It's
truly
wonderful.
It truly was. Yeah. And we can all learn from it. And so you are on a tour right now. Where are you? And have you been to bookstores and giving talks about your book?
Yes, and I've been doing talks and cooking demos and reading.
Oh, wonderful.
And it's so exciting for me to connect. Connection is what I'm all about. And to connect with people who are excited about getting back in the kitchen or growing their own food, or it makes me really happy. I just want to have dinner with everyone.
And you're continuing your Meatless Monday blog at the Huffington Post?
Yes, I love doing that. It really probably was part of what got me into this book, because I've been doing Meatless Monday for 3 years. At first, my editor said, well, how many times can you say don't eat meat? Well, one of the great things about food is that it's so subversive. We can talk about it from any angle. It can be environmental, it can be educational, it can be culinary, it can be how the food is grown. It's infinite, it's rich. And so while I was glad to do these posts every week, I kept thinking about more and more and more and how it's all connected and how we can be better connected to it. So that's how I got to Feeding the Hungry Ghost.
And also, people can get to you on the internet. Is it www.ellen-ink.com or is there
that's
other...
That's exactly
other...
right. Perfect.
Okay, good. And also, you know, you can buy the book on Amazon. Is it on Kindle yet?
I believe it is. Yes, I know it is because my mother has a copy.
Well, people read your blog posts. I mean, you are well known on that Huffington Post site, and people have seen it and have read it. And when I bring it up, it seems like you are making a mark in the world. And I congratulate you on your good work.
And I congratulate you on yours. I think it's so interesting what you're doing. You have both this medical background, but also this really great intuitive sense. I love how you work this beautiful balance.
Oh, well, I appreciate that very, very much. So I'm going to send you on your way.
I'm going to go make dinner.
Make dinner and save some for me. And have a lovely evening. Your husband's with you as well?
He should be home. He's an accountant, so I know he's going to come home hungry and tired.
Oh, good. And since he's married to you, even though he does eat meat, he doesn't eat meat that much, obviously.
No, we're going to have a great Caribbean curry tonight. I think he's going to be pretty happy.
Well, love to you. It was wonderful to meet you, and I thoroughly enjoyed talking with you.
Me too. Thank you so much. This was such a great opportunity, and it was just delicious talk.
Oh, I'm so hungry. I can hardly wait to go eat. I can hardly wait to find some baba ganoush that is in the refrigerator. How's that sound? Lovely.
Pretty good.
Yeah. So I'm going to be playing music for Mother and Child, and love to you, Ellen Tanner.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.